what's the impact of having too much calcium in the diet? And then what can we do to kind of mitigate that or improve it? And so even though it's a cheap nutrient, it has really expensive implications.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, a weekly podcast where you'll find cutting-edge insights and everything that's working in the global poultry industry. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an eco-lab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show. Today I am here with Carrie Walk. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Good to be here.
I'm really excited to talk to you today about calcium, but before we get into that, I would love to hear, how did you get into the poultry industry?
It's a bit of a convoluted approach, but I loved animals all growing up, and I wanted to be a vet or a horse trainer, which has nothing to do with chickens. But I went to the University of Missouri, and within like the first kind of 6 months, I realized everyone else wanted to be a vet. And so I thought, you know what? Maybe this isn't for me. And I got a job in the summer working at a poultry nutrition lab with Dr. David Ledoux. And I just loved it. And I loved the research. I loved the idea of kind of doing mineral research. And chickens were very easy to kind of handle. It's not like you're dragging this massive cow or horse around. You know, they're quite easy to maneuver. So yeah, I just stuck with it. And yeah, so here I am. I don't know. 15, 20 years in the industry now. So, yeah.
So what was your path from that first interaction and doing mineral research to the position that you're in now?
I enjoyed the lab work so much and then stayed at the University of Missouri and did a master's. So finished my undergrad in animal science and then stayed for a master's, all in kind of mineral enzyme poultry research. Then moved to Virginia Tech and worked with Audrey McElroy for 3 years as a PhD and then a year as a postdoc. Again, sticking with poultry, now kind of immunology, kind of gut health and nutrition, always with enzymes as well. And then moved to AB Vista in 2010, worked as a research manager. Just love the research, really like that aspect of it. Joined DSM in 2019, similar thing, doing kind of poultry research and love it. And now back at AB Vista as head of R&D, still in research.
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds like a common thread.
Exactly. Yeah. Later, you'll hear about how nerdy I am, but it's fine. Yeah.
I really like it when people are into a topic because you can tell the patience and the persistence really pays off.
Yeah, exactly.
Having a little bit of passion in there.
Yeah, exactly.
So I want to hear a little bit about our topic today, which is calcium in poultry, you know, maybe some of the requirements, solubility and digestible calcium. So maybe can you tell me a little bit about how you even got started in this area? I mean, calcium's a big deal, right? But there's so many angles we can approach it from.
Exactly. And I think it's one of those nutrients that, you know, everybody, we all talk about it, but I think it's because it's such a cheap nutrient that we don't really focus on it as much as we would like amino acids and phosphorus. Yeah. And it's one of those things that the more you research it, you realize just how important it is. And it has implications in for, you know, phosphorus digestibility. So you can't ignore calcium when you're evaluating phosphorus. When we were looking at different levels of calcium quite a few years ago, we realized that if you overfed calcium, you could have a detrimental impact even on amino acid digestibility. And it causes quite a big buffering impact in the gastrointestinal tract. And this can lead, of course, to reduction in pepsin activity, protein digestibility, but also has larger implications for maybe kind of gut function, gut health. We were linking it a little bit to kind of, you can see an increase in necrotic enteritis kind of outbreaks associated with excess calcium in the diet. And we never went further to figure out kind of exactly what was happening there, but it just has really expensive implications if we get it wrong. So that's where it started, was kind of understanding the link of, well, how can we, what's the impact of having too much calcium in the diet? And then what can we do to kind of mitigate that or improve it? And so even though it's a cheap nutrient, it has really expensive implications.
One of AB Vista's core strategies is to give customers the flexibility to do more with less, which is a common theme among many companies and producers in today's industry. As a science-driven company, AB Vista has proven results to help our customers achieve optimal performance using customized programs with our core phytase and xylanase.
Yeah, some of the disease or other outcomes are really interesting, but have you focused on both broilers and layers, or do you feel like, I mean, layers, of course, it's extremely interesting for different, you know, and important for different reasons in broilers, but with disease and all that stuff, I mean, both, you really, depends what your focus is, I guess.
Exactly. And for me, and then it's, maybe it's a shame and it's a point that's missing, is my focus has almost always been on broilers. Mm. And maybe it's because they're easier than layers, if that's fair. But absolutely, you know, that's, and maybe that's, okay, maybe that's an industry-wide kind of phenomena. It's easier to do trials in broilers. It's easier to show, and it's faster to kind of show impacts of it. Whereas with layers, they're usually longer term, and it's incredibly important, but it is longer term and usually more expensive. So if we want to kind of show kind of an impact of excess calcium, at least in broilers, it's easier to show in that sense. With layers, it's a whole different level of how they regulate calcium and kind of the impacts it can have. And so, you know, as a, for all of us, maybe in the industry, that's an area we need to focus. But then it's, you know, is the financial support always there as well? You know, broilers, it's a bigger market as well. So
The $9 billion estimate per year is a little different than the layers.
Exactly. Yeah. Even though the laying market's a great market, it's a big market. We need to do more with it. But I think that sometimes the resources just aren't always there, as they are like for the broilers. Yeah. And there's been some good comparison papers recently looking at just how broilers can utilize limestone sources versus laying hens. So I think this was work, David et al. From Massey. It might have been 2021 or 2022, where they compared broilers and layers and fed two different sources of limestone, but to each species. And they have completely different kind of retention patterns in the gizzard. They have completely different kind of digestibility coefficients for those limestones. So it's a nice way to show that we can't just use broiler data for layers, and we need to have layer data as well, kind of as we're going on this journey for calcium and digestible calcium.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So, I mean, for bone health and other things, calcium and phosphorus is really at the crux of that. And I know there's been a lot of conversation, especially with phosphorus in terms of sources. And then we've got these enzymes, you know, phytases to help digest. So why are we still looking at these requirements? They've been here for so long, but it just seems like we haven't nailed them down yet.
Yeah, that's a valid question, and it's a good question. And I think it's one of those, like, the more you learn, the less you know, or, we realize that, you know, what we're doing today is fine. It's adequate. It's working. But as we learn more about kind of how we design our experiments, what kind of basal diets we use, even like the different methods that we use in our experimental designs, how old the birds, like the factors that can influence kind of the digestibility coefficients that we've determined in the past, the pre-starter diet and how it could influence how the birds potentially could digest calcium and phosphorus, for example. As we learn all of these details, it then leads us to then question, oh, well, could we improve what we have today? Is there more things we should be doing and trying to consider? So I think it's just the natural progression. So we understand phosphorus. I think people have focused a lot on phosphorus because it is so expensive. And now that we're kind of getting a better idea of how maybe to standardize the methods to determine phosphorus digestibility and ingredients, kind of understand what factors to consider when we're estimating the requirements, the natural next step is, well, we should be looking at calcium at the same time. Yeah. Because at the moment we're still feeding total calcium, but we're looking at like digestible phosphorus, for example.
Yeah.
So could we move to digestible calcium using some of those learnings from phosphorus and then apply that to digestible calcium? So it's kind of the natural progression to just kind of improve from where we are today, knowing what we know now.
Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit more about just the application of digestible calcium? Because when we look at sources for phosphorus, you know, we've got plant and then we have inorganic, and we have a pretty good idea that most of the inorganic is pretty much usable unless something like calcium comes and, you know, takes it out of the digestive tract through different chelation processes. But I guess from like a basic, when we teach students nutrition, we're just like, calcium is digestible. So what can you tell me about maybe the reality?
So the reality is, and what we're finding is, and this is different for pigs versus chickens. So today we'll focus on chickens, but this can't apply to pigs. And also it's the focus on broilers. So as we said earlier, there's potentially it's different for layers or breeders or even turkeys and ducks. I don't even know where to start with ducks, but, but with calcium, like the digestibility coefficients, kind of we're learning from kind of literature reviews. There's been two at least that have been conducted in poultry that I'm aware of, where we were looking at different ingredients and what the calcium digestibility or usability is in those different ingredients. And surprisingly, for limestone, the average calcium digestibility coefficient is only like 55%. So it's considerably lower than that, even of what we think phosphorus digestibility would be of monocal or dical, for example. And that's in broilers. And if you think about the kind of inorganic phosphate sources, at least from the literature, the digestible calcium coefficients is really low. It's only about, you know, 40%, 42, 43%, which is really surprising. Yeah. Meat and bone meal is similar. I think it's somewhere around 45 to 50%. I can't quite remember it. So the calcium usability in those ingredients isn't 100%. It's not what we would expect. It's considerably low. So that's some factors we need to kind of understand, like, when were you trying to utilize digestible calcium? And then the other aspect of it is there is some paper suggesting that, you know, the different limestone sources, perhaps the different particle sizes, perhaps the different solubility of those sources also can give you a different digestibility coefficient. So there's a quality aspect of it that needs to be kind of mapped a little bit better or understood better. And I'd say that's probably the same for meat and bone meal, probably the same even for like inorganic phosphates. So at the moment, we know that there's going to be these differences. We know that there's this variation, but what we have available is this average response today from the work that's been done. And it hasn't, from calcium, we have, you know, there might be 15 papers looking at calcium digestibility of ingredients, whereas whereas for phosphorus, I think there's lots, and even there's you know, reference manuals that you can go to and use to get digestibility coefficients for phosphorus today. And we just don't have that yet for calcium. So, but it's a good start. We have a good start. There's some data available today already. Yeah. But it's definitely not 100%, which is what you, what you hope for or expect.
So, I mean, maybe the original reason we're not looking at this is cost, but I mean, from a physiological standpoint, if you put something in and only can use half of it, I mean, that's an impact.
Exactly. Yeah. And where's the rest of it? I mean, of course they're excreting it all, but is there a better way we can utilize it then, you know, or use sources that are better quality so less is being wasted, or, you know, or what's the impact again on phosphorus digestibility and, you know, phytate degradation, phytate binding. So how can we mitigate some of that, improve the utilization of it?
So we can't always use, I mean, we use cost as a justification to reduce something or exchange or, you know, substitute. in a diet, but maybe we need to pay a little better attention just from a digestibility standpoint.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It sounds really interesting.
And we have the information now today. We could start doing some of that already today. So that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Are there any commercial formulation systems that are incorporating any of this information, or is this something a nutritionist would have to kind of write into the program?
At the moment, I'm not aware of anybody using it already, but I think it's, I don't know. I mean, maybe this is my lack of knowledge in commercial formulation systems, but I think there's enough information today to be able to add it as a nutrient. So, you know, we have the reference papers for the digestibility coefficients. There's approximately 7 to 8 trials kind of that have looked at calcium required, like digestible calcium requirements at the different phases of growth for broilers. So there is data available to set it already as a nutrient in your formulation system, but you probably will have to do it manually. And then my kind of recommendation today is, and maybe this is a bit of a conservative approach, would be don't delete total calcium, leave it there, but add digestible calcium in your formulation. Use the information we have available and just track it. See how it moves, see what's happening. If you change your formulation, you change your ingredient source, you know, what's happening in that diet to your digestible calcium? Because in theory, you're always targeting the same total calcium, but depending on that nutrient value that you, or that ingredient you use, it could have an effect on the digestible calcium value in that formulation. So it's just something to get an idea and track it, and it, as well as the kind of the ratio between digestible calcium and digestible phosphorus, for example, and just kind of watch it and see how it tracks and changes and get comfortable with it.
Do you think we have these phases and different companies can choose to, you know, end a phase early and move on based on how their birds are doing. Mm-hmm. Do you think that we are getting the right ratio of calcium to phosphorus as far as total and available goes over time? Or do you think maybe we need to be more precise on those? Like, do you think we could be impacting broiler leg health, for example? Mm. Like, are we doing as good as we think we are with the total calcium?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think we have every intention of doing the best we possibly can. And I don't think what we're doing is wrong or bad or anything like that. And I think the values we're using today, they work for us today. I think we still have that challenge with getting, there's more calcium coming in our diet than we're aware of. So there's still that kind of, how is it being added to the diet? How can we control a bit more where the calcium is coming from? Do we need a bit more precision in the feed mill for when we add limestone, the same amount of precision that we have with inorganic phosphates or some of these kind of micronutrients? Do we need to have better like analysis of total calcium in our ingredients and then get that more often so then we can use that in our feed formulations to kind of update the values? And then I think, and this is maybe optimistic, is that when we do stuff like digestible calcium, this is a way to kind of almost trigger in our minds, oh, what is the calcium value in that ingredient? Or have we analyzed that recently? So then you update it as soon as you possibly can. And then in that sense, you get a better kind of control over the total calcium, even in your diet. So what we have today with total calcium and available phosphorus, you know, in the 2-to-1 ratio, there's a definite reason why we have that ratio. So, and, you know, and we could base it off of published literature from the past, you know, so I don't think it's wrong, but, you know, we could be more precise going forward in the future. And what we're finding, and this is some of the questions we still have with digestible calcium, you get the requirement to optimize body weight gain for digestible calcium is different than the requirement to optimize tibia ash for digestible calcium. Mm. So where do we want, and then it's different again for phosphorus retention. So where do we want to focus that requirement? You can only have one in your feed formulation, but is it to optimize tibia ash or is it to optimize body weight gain? Whereas today with total calcium, we just have one. And unfortunately, I don't know enough about the previous literature and how the requirements were established to know whether it was based on optimum tibia ash or body weight gain. That's something I need to go back and look at maybe. But it's definitely, you know, something we need to kind of think about and understand where should we set it today when we're focusing on digestible calcium? And could it be a bit more precise to achieve what we're looking for? If we're raising heavy birds, perhaps we do want to set it at tibia ash. If we're raising birds to, you know, 2.5 kilos, perhaps it's less important for like tibia ash, and we want to approach it with phosphorus retention or average daily gain. But we don't have that exact answer yet. So that's something to consider and think about. And that could help with precision in the future, I think, as well.
So I would assume that if you're trying to optimize the tibia ash, the requirement might be slightly higher than if it is for body weight gain. Is that correct?
Yes, that's absolutely right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that it's a cost, but it's not a large one, but then you got to make space in your diet, right, to take something else out. So
exactly. And that's the interesting thing is because when we were estimating kind of the requirement work, we were focusing really on kind of performance parameters, bone ash performance, phosphorus retention, but the economics of it, we didn't really consider. So that's something else that, you know, for your specific production system, where is the optimum that you're looking for? Because if you add a bit more calcium in it to optimize tibia ash, what it's going to do is it's going to make you, generally what it does is more limestone would come in, corn or wheat comes out, and then oil has to come in, and oil is expensive. So all of a sudden, you've created a slightly more expensive diet that now you have to justify why. Why are you putting more of this back in? Even though limestone's cheap, it takes up space. Yeah. So that's something to consider. Yeah.
So you've kind of mentioned some of the more cutting edge and of papers that have maybe come out over the last 5 or 10 years or so. But if someone really wanted to dig into this and maybe start using or kind of wrap their mind around getting this put into action in their system, like what are your best suggestions? Like who's doing the recent work? If you know of anyone offhand, sometimes that's kind of hard.
No. So there's been quite a bit of work that was done kind of by Massey University. So I could recommend David et al. From about 2019 to about now. So she's done quite a bit of good work. Walk et al. So I've done some papers, but I don't want to like tout. What is it? Blow your own horn. Have a read, see what you think. It's fine. You can be critical. but also, you know, there's some kind of some good stuff, like just methodology and kind of digestibility coefficient. So again, Anwar et al. From Massey University has done quite a bit of stuff. There's some stuff, you know, of course, the University of Maryland, Rosalina Angell is doing quite a bit of research on it. There's some good stuff coming out now. Looking at more of the details, and then some review articles as well that are quite good. So we did one in 2021, and then David et al. Just did one in 2023. So that might be a good reference to start to find the bigger, like the individual papers as well. Yeah. So there's some good stuff out there. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like, especially when you have it across several institutions, it's feels more trustworthy.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's poultry related. So, and then of course, if you're interested in pigs and, or pigs and poultry and the comparisons, then there's quite a bit of work from the University of Illinois. Lee et al, Lagos et al, Gonzalez Vega et al. It's just, there's a lot of the pig stuff as well for comparison. And it is quite an interesting kind of comparison between pigs and poultry. They are not the same. So it's just quite interesting. Just to complicate things.
Yes. We feed similar diets, but they're not the same.
And pigs, they digest calcium better than poultry, which I don't know how, I probably shouldn't be saying these things because I don't know how to answer that. So like, that's just, one of these, the more you learn, the less you know type of thing.
Well, I mean, that's where you want to get to, right? You want to get to the point where you can push the information forward. And if you think you know everything, you really don't. So
And you have to keep kind of an open mind and realize that actually sometimes you might be wrong, and but then why is it? And then you figure out how like how to improve then in that sense too. So, you know, it's yeah. all, it's the whole yeah. learning process, but it is fun. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the biggest deal from a research standpoint to get the information to the next level is having the proper model. So I think you're spot on with reading some of the different digestibility models and their impact on your outcomes.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Huge deal.
Yeah. And all of that is if you're aware of it, you know, like these things like the age of the animal or, you know, like the composition of your research diet. So if you have a semi-synthetic diet versus a corn-based diet, you can get a completely different digestible calcium coefficient for limestone or meat and bone meal, yeah. for example. And we think it has something to do with just the passage rate and just the kind of the transit time in the gastrointestinal tract. But if you're aware of these types of things, you can account for that then and understand why there's some differences between maybe the yeah. different labs or why we're not all agreeing and we're not all finding the exact same result. And that's just, to me, is so important. So then you know and you can start standardizing things for the future or understanding that I did it like this and this is why, and you did it like this and this is why we're getting differences. And that's important. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is, especially because, you know, one person can't potentially analyze all the feed ingredients. Like, we need a lot of people working on this problem.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And there's the sources across the United States and in other countries. Yeah. It becomes a big, big deal.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
So where do you think digestible calcium work is going? It sounds like you've made some highlights. Model is important. The source is important. Maybe some of the other parts of the diet matrix are really important. So, like, what are the questions that you are like your pie in the sky? Like, I would love to answer this. Like, where are you going?
Yeah, I think there's still some work for kind of standardizing the methods. So for calcium, if there was a way similar to what they're doing with phosphorus, which I think is great, a way to kind of standardize our digestibility coefficient methods, then I think we'd go a long way to kind of having more consistent results. We're always going to have the ingredient variation that's going to exist. Understanding the ingredient variation, how can we model it? You know, is there a way we can do it with in vitro assays? Is there an analytical assay we can do? Is it acid binding capacity? Is it solubility and particle size? You know, is there a way that we can take some of these lab-based analysis and then model what it means for digestibility or the quality of that ingredient? And, you know, that, of course, the calcium ones, meat and bone meal, limestone, inorganic phosphates. I think that would be really quite nice to have. What requirements should we recommend? You know, going back to the, is it weight gain? Is it tibia ash? Is it, you know, phosphorus retention? Where do we target? And what's the best recommendation for that sense? I'm trying to think of what else we could do. I think there's just, we've made there's a lot of good information available today, but of course answering some of those lingering questions would be quite nice to have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good. It gives you a place to go. So your work is never done.
Exactly. Absolutely. Exactly. job security, so, I guess.
Heck yeah. I'm there for that.
Yeah.
But it also feels good to make an impact. I mean, that is what it ultimately is. And the birds care what you're feeding them, and the people care about bird welfare and responsible use of resources. So it's cool. It's a good area.
Exactly. And this is just broilers, you know, like this has so much importance in layers and breeders and, you know, in turkeys. And so, you know, as we get more comfortable and more established in the broilers, hopefully the natural next progression is just you start getting more information available for layers and turkeys and the other poultry species. So it just kind of evolves and into, you know, almost like a standard kind of assay. It's standard practice.
Yes.
What we do now, which, well, let's see, you know, in the next couple of years or so. Yeah. Should be good.
You could have an assay named after you.
Yeah.
Like the walk assay, the walk calcium assay.
Yeah. That'd be quite good. Yeah, something. I'm going to write that down. Something I need to kind of.
Yes. Yeah.
Go
just
for
start,
it.
Yeah. Just start citing the methods in your paper as the walk assay.
Exactly. So that's yours. A good idea.
I think you should. You got to toot your own horn whenever
exactly.
you can.
Yeah. I like that idea. That's pretty good.
So for someone who maybe wants to start using this information right now, you've listed some really excellent resources and some of the caveats and that sort of stuff. But what do you recommend that producers and nutritionists do today as we're kind of still in the learning curve?
I think it's if you have the time, go in and find some of those kind of review articles, because they at least give you an indication of kind of the different digestibility coefficients that are available for calcium today. If you can, keep total calcium in your formulations, but yeah. But add a new line, add a new nutrient as digestible calcium. Use the values from the literature, and because at least you can reference where you got this information from, and start just tracking digestible calcium in your formulation. You know, add it there, keep total calcium because that's what we're all used to seeing today, but just have it there, digestible calcium, as kind of a watch, and just have a look and see. At the same time, I think it helps, you know, you then start realizing where calcium is coming from in your ingredients, because you need to then assign it. Well, do I need to assign a digestible calcium value to this ingredient? Does it have enough calcium in it? You know, so you'll become aware of it, but also, you know, understand where calcium is coming from. It could be coming from soybean meal. There's more in soybean meal than sometimes you would expect. Premixes, sometimes they use limestone as a carrier in a premix, so it will have more calcium than you'd expect. Limestone, how is it being added to your diets? You know, do you have a bit more precision that you could target addition a bit easier, or not easier, but a bit more precise addition in the feed mill? And then can you analyze it? And usually when we recommend that, there's always the question about, well, there's a variation from the labs is so high in analytical calcium. And in this case, that is absolutely true. But if you can find a lab, a reliable lab, and you talk to them and you make them aware of how important the calcium analysis is, and to have kind of, you know, clean glassware, used like water that's been deionized, do everything possible to avoid any contamination with calcium, that hopefully that lab will start giving you more reliable results. And the analytical variation, it's always going to exist, but maybe could be decreased in that sense. So there's already things we can be doing today and just starting to kind of track calcium a bit more than maybe what we're already doing, and seeing, you know, if you're formulating 1%, are you getting 1%, or is it higher or lower than what you expect? And potentially where could that be coming from? And I think that already is doing quite a bit more than what we maybe have done in the past. Yeah.
I think that's correct. And how those lab analyses, they sometimes get you. I mean,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely a real thing, but also in my experience, if you have a good relationship with the lab and they know that how important calcium analysis are, and they know that you would like your ingredients analyzed before to use them to formulate the diets, for example, it really does become quite a closer kind of fit to what you formulate is what you're analyzing in the diet. It happens and it can work, but you have to have quite a good relationship, I think, with the lab. Or they have to be aware of just how important it is to get it, like calcium, to remove as much calcium contamination from external sources as possible.
Yep, the analyses matter.
Exactly. Yeah.
Are there any other little tidbits or important points that we didn't cover from this topic?
I think we've got the basics. I think we've got, you know, there's some good references out there. We still have a lot of questions. So I think that's kind of also one of the things, not to scare everybody away, you know, but also just to be aware that it's a evolving process and an evolving kind of area. So we're learning as we go, and we'll continue to kind of learn and develop as we go. But you know, it's an interesting area, and it's definitely worth monitoring, because calcium is cheap, limestone is cheap, but you know, there's definitely improvements that can be had in performance, phosphorus digestibility, amino acid digestibility. So there's more expensive nutrients that are being impacted by getting calcium right. We can have a bigger impact on some of these other nutrients as well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big deal. Yeah. It's the community. I think it is, impact. But
yeah.
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 Well, as we wrap up, I want to ask you the three questions we ask all of our guests.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boehringer Ingelheim. Health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International. Creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo.
And the first one is do you have a favorite poultry reference that you use?
So I don't, it's not a poultry reference, but I absolutely, and it's, I use quite often this textbook I got when I was a undergrad or a master student called Biostatistics in Animal Science.
Yeah.
And it's probably one of those textbooks that, you know, the margins are kind of like tore because I keep like opening it and flattening it on my desk, and all the pages are earmarked and highlighted in a lot of places. But I will go to that one quite frequently for contrast, statistical models, even SAS, JMP scripting. It's a quite a good reference for kind of, yeah, for statistics for sure. Yeah. And the type of statistics that we do as animal scientists. I would say that's probably one of my favorite ones that I would go to.
That's a great book.
It's a good book. Yes.
If you can't analyze what you did at the end, I mean, what's the point of doing it, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So no, I like that one a lot. Yeah.
No, it's a great reference. Do you have, outside of your work, resource that you've been using regularly, or a favorite book or a movie that you've watched recently?
I love to read. And so more recently, there's two authors I kind of almost always go to if I want to kind of unwind and relax. And it's recently Richard Osman's Thursday Murder Club. So that's quite a good little series. Yes. It's ridiculous and frivolous, but I like it. And then there's Janet Ivanovic, who's, she does all these kind of Stephanie Plum bounty hunter, like, fiction thing. It's just, they're ridiculous, yes. But I like them because then you can just be relaxed to it. It's a bit silly and frivolous, and it's just something nice to just unwind on in the evenings and kind of on long haul flights. And so it's, and it has nothing to do with work, so it's great.
Yeah.
It's completely different.
You need that. I mean, exactly. You're talking about like the book versions of all the murder podcasts, which are so popular right now.
Exactly.
So yours can be read anywhere. You don't need the internet.
Exactly. And there's something really nice about holding a book in your hand. I just really like a book. So but then that's the nerdy side of me that's coming out more and more as we do this podcast, but that's fine. I come to terms with it.
I love that. You gotta own it. You gotta own your model system that you've created, and you gotta own the way you unwind.
Exactly. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So my last question for you is, what would you give for somebody for advice for being successful in the poultry industry?
I think there's two things. Is it like learn from your failures? Because I hate failing, but I really like learning from it. So there's a lot you can take from things that don't quite work the way you expected it to, or your hypothesis was wrong, or, so there's definitely learnings to be had from failures. And then the other one is absolutely just enjoy what you do, because all of a sudden the enthusiasm and the passion just kind of follows. So, that's what I would kind of recommend. And you just, hopefully with the passion and enthusiasm, you become successful as well.
Those are great pieces of advice.
Thanks.
I have one extra question. Do you think about calcium differently, for human nutrition now that work on it in chickens?
That's a good question. I think, probably, but do I practice what I preach? Which would be your next one Probably not. But also I think that I, at least because of it, like it's knowing a bit more about nutrition, I think there's an element of it that's a nutrition aspect of it for the human side of things. But I also think I'm no longer a growing animal. And so I, my requirements are probably a maintenance rather than like growth or, well, hopefully I don't want it to have any increase in average daily gain. So hopefully it's just a maintenance requirement is what I'm after.
Yeah, sometimes I just think about all the human nutritionists that have to work with basically wild populations they're not controlling because
that's true.
Humans are not reporting what they eat correctly every day.
No, exactly. And it's a survey and you forget like you've had like three biscuits at like before lunch or something like that. Like,
Yeah, but these birds we have monitored down to the gram. Exactly. I mean, we know.
Yeah, that's right.
The precision is there.
I do think from the pig side of it, there's probably a lot we could apply maybe to the human side of things. There could be some definitely learnings there that, you know, could be more transferable than maybe than poultry to humans, but it still is, you're right. So I couldn't imagine being a human nutritionist and it's still, and all the questions we have as poultry nutritionists, I couldn't even imagine it for humans.
I know.
It'd be so different.
There's a really positive benefit to being able to have a controlled research environment.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. And even that, you have some there's loads of variation in it, but you try and control it as much as possible, don't you?
Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today. This is a really, really good topic to talk about, from doing nutrition and also teaching other people about it. So thank you so much.
No, thank you. I really enjoyed it.